Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 162 of Her, the podcast where you'll hear the naked truth about her mind, her body, her life, and today, well, her heart risk. We have a terrific show coming up, and just know that it's made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Vitamins, the delicious once-a-day gummies that contain all of the essential vitamins, minerals, and omega oils customized just for women. To learn more, hop on over to SmartyPantsVitamins.com. And here's your reminder to click on to iTunes after this episode and rate and review the show, because, honey, I'm just sitting here waiting to hear from you. That's right, twiddling my thumbs, waiting for all of your feedback, because I love that connection with you. Okay? So remember, rate and review. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about her.
So I'm trolling around once again, as you know I do, looking for a hot and cool science as it relates to women and women's health. And lo and behold, we're back to the waist to hip ratio again. You know I've talked about this in the past. Good Lord. I mean, it's just so, what is going on here? So we had this recent study where researchers examined data on almost 500,000 adults in England, Scotland, and Wales. At the start, all of the participants ranged in age from 40 to 69 with an average age of 56. They were typically overweight but didn't have a history of heart disease. After an average follow-up of 7 years, 5,710 people had heart attacks. Heart attacks were more common in people who were obese, with the risk increasing along with increases in body mass index, which, as you remember, is a ratio of height to weight. But the increased risk was even higher for people who had an unusually large waist circumference or a high waist to hip ratio, meaning their hips aren't much wider than their waist, and the effect was particularly strong in women. All right, it's time for us to look at all this. So who better to do this than Dr. Jennifer Haith? She's assistant professor of medicine at Columbia University Medical Center, co-director for the Women's Center for Cardiovascular Health, director of the Adult Pulmonary Hypertension Center, and director of Cardiac Obstetric Service. All of this means she probably has no personal life because she's working way too hard. Right, Jennifer?
No, that's wrong. That's wrong. You're close. You're close.
Oh, my God. Dr. Haith. So, I just read you this lovely new study, which you know all about anyway, and we're back to this waist-hip ratio, and then to further complicate it, as you're probably well aware, there was just yet another study that said even if you were not just this apple shape so much, but even when you're large and pear-shaped, you're still not out of the woods. So help us. What the heck is going on here with heart disease risk and your body shape?
Well, it's a really interesting question. I think, first of all, for a long time, we've used BMI as a way to define health and sort of obesity. So your BMI, as you know, is calculated using your height and weight. And we have, you know, healthy and overweight and obese BMIs. And what this study was doing was looking more carefully at not just whether you're obese, but how the fat is sort of distributed in your body. And that there's something about this visceral fat that accumulates in the bellies of some women as they get older, and probably, you know, after having children and through menopause, that, you know, seems to pose a particularly high risk for women in terms of heart disease. And so they were calculating that particular area of the body compared to the hips, and showing that, you know, women who did have this large waist or a high waist to hip ratio were at increased risk for heart disease.
Huh. All right. So what's really happening here? Is it real? It's really all about the visceral fat, right?
I think they don't know for sure what's really happening. I think they believe that visceral fat you know, has some kind of inflammatory process associated with it, and that increases risk of diabetes, coronary artery disease, and that those things together are obviously putting women at increased risk of having a heart attack. We know diabetes is a huge risk factor for heart disease. And then possibly directly causing coronary artery disease through some inflammatory process. But I don't think it's so obvious other than just making the determination that that is causing a risk. Now we need to try to really understand what it is about that visceral fat that's making people have a higher risk of heart disease.
Well, I know, since I'm a fatologist, I spent a lot, I know, don't you hate it, it's the kid in the front row with the, I know. So I spent a lot of time at the NIH looking at adipocytes, our little friends, the fat people. And actually what I was using at that time is our model was Cushing's disease. Which we were the central, sort of command central for, Cushing's disease for the world, since it's a rare syndrome, and it comes in a bunch of different forms. However, everyone ended up with a belly of fat, male or female. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things we found was that visceral fat is pro-inflammatory. There's no question about mm-hmm. that. So that really gave rise to a lot of what we now call the metabolic syndrome, which is what you just described, which is an increased risk of cardiovascular disease, hypertension, clearly diabetes, and also cancer. So it's kind of a fascinating phenomenon. So not all fat is equal in the human body. That little fat that makes up your bat wings, not so much. Yeah. Okay, so fine, you can't do the sleeveless dress thing quite yet. However, that is very different fat than the fat that actually exists in the viscera, underneath your abdominal muscle wall. It even looks different. That fat is white. The stuff underneath your skin is yellow, so it's called subcutaneous. So there's something about this fat, which is why you, as a cardiologist, are constantly sitting down with women and saying, okay, your waist-to-hip ratio is whatever it is. And if it's above, if it's one or above, this is not a good thing. And you're trying to describe to them why they need to change this. When are you noticing this change in women as you are working with women in all of these centers that you direct? When a woman comes in and she's 40 and she's starting to look ever so apple-ish, is that really when you're seeing it, or are you actually seeing it earlier?
Well, you know, first of all, I think it's so interesting what you're saying about Cushing's disease, which, as you're saying, is a disease, but we cause a lot of Cushing's disease ourselves at the hospital when we take care of patients who get transplanted, because they have to be on steroids and sometimes very high dose steroids to, prevent rejection. And in those people, as you just described, we'll see this very obvious sort of central obesity where there's this fat deposition centrally, like you're saying, happens in people who have excess, steroid secretion on their own. So that's, very, very interesting in terms of what's the role of steroids and heart disease and how, your own body's secretion of steroids can cause it, as does, iatrogenically cause it. But I would say that I think that there are several different body types in women from the beginning, right? There's the tall and skinny body type, there's the short, but also still very defined body type, and then there's people who have a more pear shape from the beginning. And I think that those shapes exist for a long period of time, I would say starting in people's 20s and 30s, but that after childbirth and the excess, weight that comes with childbirth and heading into their late 30s, 40s, and then 50s, that sort of seems to get more solidified. And then in women who have a more pear and apple shape, that's when it seems to get worse if there isn't an intervention made. So I try to tell women that they need to be very aware of how their fitness level is, how their bodies look, and if they find that they're sedentary and not doing a ton of exercise and that they're noticing that they're getting this central obesity like we're describing, that they really need to intervene early rather than later, because it can be hard to get rid of.
Yeah, And as a woman enters perimenopause, as you're well aware, there's a shape shifting that takes place anyway.
Correct.
Estrogen, there's no question that estrogen and estrogen primarily, but of course we have several, at least several sex hormones in play, that estrogen has a hell of a lot to do with where a woman's body fat is going to be placed. In her childbearing years, you definitely want to have a little bit of that fat depot, as I always love to call the Exxon station for fuel, for the breastfeeding, et cetera, and the hip size and buttocks. And there it is. Then, you know, as a woman enters perimenopause, there's a shape shifting where even in slender women, even in athletes, they notice it's much easier to pick up at least subcutaneous fat in the belly, around the belly. No question about that. I've had elite athletes, you know, note this. It's not horrific for them by any means. For them, you know, gaining 3 or 4 pounds is, you know, their idea of a nightmare. Grand majority of women entering perimenopause today are now facing not 3 or 4 pounds, more like 30 and 40 pounds. And actually, I just saw a statistic the other day that the average woman's waist size today is 38 inches. That's average, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they didn't really differentiate by age. I will put money on it. Don't bet with me. I do make money off my bets that as a woman enters her perimenopause, you know, that sucker is going up, is knocking on 40 inches, right? And that's
right.
Where you're really seeing a lot of the big changes in that whole anywhere between 40 and 55 kind of corridor there. And I'm sure that you as a cardiologist must be hopping on that like there's no tomorrow, because you can't have a woman walking around with an apple shape. And by the way, she could have a normal BMI, but be apple shaped. A lot of Asians have that issue, right?
Right. And, you know, that's was going to be my next, you know, talking point with you, is that, you know, I think it's a very hard message that we send to women. Sometimes, you know, they hear so many conflicting things about what's healthy, right? Is BMI healthy? Is how your fat is distributed healthy? You know, then there's a lot of data to show that women who are too thin have a shorter life expectancy than women who have some weight. So is it actually muscle mass that's the most important, and strength as you move into the perimenopause, menopause, and older age, right? We want women to feel strong, to be healthy. How do we define healthy? You know, we want them to be able to get up themselves from a chair, put their own clothes on, take a shower themselves. That requires some muscle mass, right? So we want them to not be frail, but we don't want it to be adipose visceral, like this visceral fat around the belly either. So there's you know, it's distribution and it's fitness level, I think, is what I try to focus on and talk to women about in terms of overall health.
Yeah. And, you know, I like to put together an equation. You know, first of all, if you went on the street, seriously, Jennifer, if you and I just hit the street and walked up to someone and said, and asked them the question, because I've done this a million times. So what's BMI? You know, they'll say, oh, yeah, my body fat is 25%. Okay. I said,
right.
No, that's not
right.
BMI. Okay. They get totally
right.
confused, or they'll just give you a glazed look, or they'll say, is that my height divided by what? And, you know, and they just get it all weirded out. All right. So BMI is moderately useless for the consumer, because absolutely
right.
no one understands this thing. So bag that. What I do instead is I usually ask them to just get a waist measurement. And I just simply say, no matter, even if your waist is sitting in another county right now, it doesn't matter. Just get a damn tape measure and just, you know, get something around where your belly button is. Just kind of do a little bit of geography here, right? And then get a number, right? And whatever that number, you don't even have to measure your hip, right? Because that then ends up being another nightmare trying to figure out
right,
how to do
right,
that
right.
right. All right.
right.
Just give me a number for your waist. And then at the same time, give me your height, your weight, and it'd be kind of cool to understand what your body fat percentage is. You know, and you could do that off a, you know, $29.95 body fat scale now. I mean, they're incredibly cheap. Now, what do you get from all of that? All right. The first thing you get are numbers you can actually deal with. You don't even have to give me your weight. I could just use the other numbers. Your body fat, right, is 30% or more. It's not the world's greatest, right? So in the best of all worlds, it'd be really great. We could jump up and down with joy if it was somewhere between 25 and 30. All right. Anything below that, if you're healthy, right, would be kind of cool too. You know, 20 to 25%, it'd be totally killer. Anything below that is you're either genetically thin or you're an athlete or both.
Correct.
Right.
Right.
So,
right.
Then you kind of go to that place. So now I gave you some real easy numbers. So you look down, and also, you know what I found, Jennifer? It's like a psychological thing. Let's just kind of go to the woman's mind. If she steps on a scale and sees some funky number that starts with two, you know, it's like 220 or, you know, I mean, that's just
right.
like, you know, give me an adult beverage. That's an adult right. beverage moment. You just, no, that's
right,
like
right.
a bad day.
Right.
So that's always a bummer. But if you look at a body fat, it's only two numbers, right? And it's something
uh-huh.
that I think I was surprised when I started doing body comps years ago. That women are like much more embracing of that. So if I say, yo, you know, your body fat is 32%, they'll be like, wow, okay, so what should it be? And then I'll say, well, you know, hey, let's head for south of 30. And they'll go, oh, okay, you know, and they're
so
good with that. They haven't gone.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, it really works.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
then when it comes to the waist
limit.
Thing, well, you know, the waist thing is a funky thing. It goes to fashion, right? So let's
right.
go to the gap. What numbers do you see there, right? So the numbers go up to what? I mean, I don't know, like 32 or I don't know, whatever. So for a waist size, and, you know, I always laugh because after 32, it's your size is called elastic, right? And so now we're into Eileen Fisher and, you know, we're kind of going to
yep.
those places with the floaty goddess stuff.
Right,
so,
right.
If you're actually looking at numbers, women know these numbers. We're not stupid. We know what our waist
right.
thing is because we have to try to cram ourselves into jeans and
right.
slacks and things like that. So this comes up. So what I love to do is kind of go to a place where a woman's already hanging. She's hanging with fashion. She has no choice. Got to buy some clothes here, right?
Right.
And at the same time, body fat's not going to kill her because she looks at that. BMI is totally useless because she has no idea what the hell you're talking about. And weight is a nightmare. So, and then you look at the
right.
waist circumference, you're at the fashion thing. That's kind of the psychology I've used. What do you think about that, Jennifer?
I mean, I agree. I think that I think that women are getting a little tired of being beaten up about their weight. So I agree with you that it would be awesome if we could help them focus on something that feels positive and attainable and not saying to them, you need to lose 80 pounds, 60 pounds, 100 pounds, which in and of itself isn't actually only the truth. We don't really just want people to lose weight. We want them to be healthy and feel good and feel fit and reduce that, like we're talking about, that visceral abdominal fat. So I really always tell my patients, I don't care about how much weight you lose as much as I want you to just start really getting active and change your diet. You know, I want them to eat healthier. I want them to eat Mediterranean. I want them to focus on getting a pair of sneakers and walking. You know, I want them to feel strong because I think that when they start to see that they have a little bit more muscle definition, when they start to do more activity and eat healthier, then the weight is less the focus and it's more about their health, overall health, you know, and I try to steer away from, like you're saying, focusing on an actual number of pounds and trying to stick to, you know, numbers or goals that are feel more achievable and positive.
I think
that's better.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm on it with you. I mean, we're both on
right.
the same page. And you know what
right.
I found? There was a RAND study that was done quite a few years ago. And it was a global study. Globally, there was one thing
right.
that women, it was a gender-specific study, wanted more than anything else as they, you know, aged. I mean, it didn't matter if they were 30, 40, but especially after the age of 50, they were really thinking about this. And it was one
okay.
word, independence. A
right.
woman does not like it when she's not independent, mentally, physically. She doesn't, you know, women are you know, you and I are women. I don't want to have anybody help me with anything. You know, like I was just, you know, I came back from a business trip and I'll put my own damn luggage in overhead, you know, you know, get out of my way, man. Watch what I've been doing at the gym.
And
you know, well, the other thing too, is in the great centenarians, the nuns from the nun study, there was a great quote from Sister Genevieve Kunkel, one of the most famous of the nuns of the Notre Dame. And she was quoted during a Today Show piece. I think you might remember this. It was about 10 years ago when they said, well, my gosh, sister, what is the secret to your success? And her answer, she always had these one-liners that just like laid you down on the floor. She said, well, I have but two good traits. She says, I'm alert and I'm vertical. And I said, damn, that's my mission in life. I want to stay alert and vertical. So, I mean, there you have the independence thing. So what you said about fitness was killer, because that's exactly what it's all about. Fit mentally, fit physically, and really concentrating on staying healthy and fit enough. And let's just, you know, stop all this silliness with just staring at a scale with a body weight. And can we kind of look more functionally? Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah, and I think that women, with a lot of help with other women and social media now, I think we're starting to make a dent in women understanding that their biggest risk of dying is from heart disease, even though a lot of women still don't know that. And I try to make sure that every time I talk to anybody about anything, I always include that statement. Women, your biggest risk of death is heart disease, because they think it's not. And I think that now that women are getting more aware and they know that it's on the radar and they know how big a role things like diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol play, and we're looping in our OBGYNs to help screen women, you know, to help identify their risks and make sure that they know, like you said, women are, I mean, I hate to say it, like, we're the rulers. You know, we control the family, we get all the stuff done, we make sure everyone's healthy, we organize the appointments for everyone. I mean, we're the doers, and no woman, like you said, wants to be incapacitated. And so again, thinking about what is healthy, well, what's everyone's goal? I think it would be to live a long, healthy life where you're active and feel good, and then hopefully drop dead when you're old, really old, and never suffer and don't have cancer or heart disease or anything. And how do we get to that point? And again, what we're talking about with being fit, can you get up from a chair by yourself? You know, that's actually a thing that we do to assess people's ability to go through things like heart surgery and procedures, is how much strength do they have? Can they get up? Can they walk around on their own unassisted? You know, does anybody, you know, want to be 75, 85, but can't, you know, get themselves to the bathroom? I mean, that's nobody's goal. And so I think if we shift the focus to, how do you want to live your like best life, and you know, as you get older, then I think that women will focus on strength, and that eventually that will lead to less of this obesity fat epidemic. You know, if we can really focus on being healthy and give people a vision of longevity.
I love it. And, you know, add one more thing to your assessment. And sorry, I'm a fellow of the American College of Sports Medicine, so we look at this all day long. So you ready? Grip strength. Mm-hmm. It's one of the easiest things ever to measure.
Correct.
Yeah, grip
totally.
Strength is superb, absolutely superb. And everyone out there can, they have these really cool little sort of spring devices that you can buy for like $5.95 almost anywhere. And you just basically, you know, practice with it every day and make sure your grip is nice and strong, for the obvious reasons. There's a huge correlation between grip strength and physical independence on the overall.
Uh-huh.
So that's something that really be out there. As you know, as a last thought, you know, I'm just thinking, right, for how many years have you and I and other people in women's healthcare been saying that women are just not getting the message that heart disease is the number one killer? It's not breast cancer, it's not lung cancer, it's heart disease. Do you really think that's still the same, or have we made any inroads there?
You know, I think we have made some inroads. I think that the bias that exists is still pretty shocking. I think that if you think about what we're surrounded by as individuals living, you know, in this country and in other countries, when's the last movie that you saw where a woman was depicted as having a massive heart attack and collapsing? It just doesn't happen. We don't see women portrayed in movies, in television, in books, in children's books. The mother is not dying of a heart attack, right? These are stories about men that we see perpetuated. I think that there's an attempt to improve awareness, but I think that there is a lot of stigma associated with heart disease. I think that women who have heart attacks, when someone says, you know, oh, she had a heart attack in her 50s, the first question is like, was she really fat? Did she smoke? You know, does she eat cheeseburgers all day? And, you know, that is the wrong message. I don't want women to think that. And I really think it's important to get the message out that that is not who's necessarily getting heart attacks. Yes, you may have an increased risk of heart attack if you have big waist and visceral fat. But it's not about people that are eating cheeseburgers and sitting on the couch all day. And it's not only about people who are smoking or, you know, sweaty, disgusting men who are, you know, depicted playing, having sex or playing tennis and having a heart attack. You know, like regular women, everyday women are having heart attacks, chest pain, discomfort, slightly different symptoms than men. And they don't know, or they're embarrassed to talk about it. So I think the more we get it out there that that's not what it is, that a lot of women, or most women, are going to have heart disease, we have to try to destigmatize it so that people aren't afraid and that they go and get preventative care, because that's really crucial in helping people. I mean, this is a disease process that can be reversed, which is not like cancer. You know, cancer, you get cancer, you have to get chemo and all this treatment. With heart disease, you can make changes that actually reverse your risk. And that's very empowering, or it should be, you know.
I love it. And, you know, it's interesting that you bring up this shame, blame, guilt thing that women have with heart disease, where guys really don't have that. I think they kind of they soften it by saying, okay, well, I got off track, and I'll give up the smoking. Okay, you know, we're done with the burgers,
right.
Type of thing. Whereas with women, it's like, oh my God, I did this to myself, and
right.
You know, it's shame, blame, and guilt. Whereas, you know, and I know how many women out there actually have funky genes, where their cholesterol is through the ceiling, their good form of cholesterol isn't very good at all, and they're wide open for increased vulnerability for heart disease, and they have a familial history of this. And women need
Correct.
To be able to put two and two together and remember that, because this is huge. They have to know that. And people like yourself, you know, do the appropriate studies, and they're able to tell women that look what's happening in your family. Your mother had a heart attack, your father had a heart attack, something else happened, or back and forth and up and down. And now we really need to work around what you have here, because you've actually seen that maybe their lipoproteins are funky one way or the other.
Right.
And you did the appropriate work. So, you know, women, stop with the shame, blame, and guilt already. And instead just realize...
Crazy.
Oh, it's huge. You could
and it's
you
like
could
and
reverse.
Then why are we holding women to a different standard than men? It's just like you said, like, oh,
exactly.
You know, his father had a heart attack and now he's on a better diet, and everyone's like, oh, good job, you know, Joe or whatever. Whereas a woman says that she had a heart attack and it's like, oh, what were you doing? You know, like, why did you? But
yeah,
like, that's totally unfair. It's like they have the same exact rates of heart disease than men, if not more now.
Exactly.
So, you know, okay. And also women have to tell each other and talk about it with each other. If they have a heart problem, they need to tell the friends in their life and make people aware and not hide it. You know, that's also very important.
Okay. I just absolutely love this. We've been talking to Dr. Jennifer Haith, and she is assistant professor of medicine at Columbia University Medical Center and cardiologist par excellence. You can learn more about her work by going to nyp.org/physician/JHHaythe to learn more about her wonderful work. Jennifer, thank you for being on the Her Podcast. This has really been eye-opening, to say the least, and I hope heart-opening to women who are listening out there. Can't thank you enough for your wisdom and your excellent points to be able to move forth with, and really empowering for women as it relates to heart disease. Our gratitude is a major shout out for you. Oh, absolutely.
Right.
And be careful. You'll be on again and again. You know that. We've tapped
That's
you.
Great.
We've tapped you big time. Heck yeah. Good. Okay, now everyone out there, run on over to iTunes, rate and review this show, because this was awesome. Give it up for Dr. Jennifer Haith, because we're waiting to hear from you, and I know I'm going to be sharing your rate and reviews with her. So come on, get on over to iTunes. Do this right now. I'm Dr. Pam Peek, host of the Her Podcast. Follow me on Facebook. Come on down at Dr. Pam Peek or Twitter at Pam Peek MD. And remember to catch every episode of the Her Podcast on iTunes or Radio MD. Thanks for listening today, and stay well.